Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The Election Commission has set the 12th of March as polling day for the Johor State elections, with a 14-day campaign period that will kick off following nomination day on the 26th of February. Now, this comes after weeks of political posturing and personal rancor between key political personalities and with little debate about policy. Will this poll be an incubator for new political players and alliances? Let's ask our first guest, political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh. She's an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham Malaysia's Asia Research Institute. Bridget, what do you think will have to be UMNO's game plan going into the state election? You know, now that they have decoupled themselves from this marriage of convenience with Bersatu and PAS.
Well, I think there are two things that are going on. Number one, UMNO will have to keep its own act together in terms of managing its infighting. And number two, I think that they are still in a battle on the ground with Bersatu, where, of course, many of these are former UMNO people. And I think there is an attempt clearly to try to basically remove this particular party from the playing field. And I expect it's going to be quite a bloody battle on the ground.
Bridget, do you think that Melaka holds some key to understanding what voting trends might be like and how at least these two contenders, the UMNO-led parties versus, you know, Perikatan Nasional led by Bersatu? Is Melaka instructive?
Melaka is instructive, and it raises questions. So first of all, you know, what we saw very interestingly in Melaka is drops in turnout, for particularly among Pakatan Harapan supporters, but also among key communities that are particularly older voters involving COVID. I think the turnout question is going to be a very serious one in Johor. The EC said 70%, but until they begin to sort of have a more postal voting and some measures in place for the estimated 15 to 18% of outstation voters, we're going to have a very significant drop in turnout, and especially given that we have now automatic registered voters in the list, which were traditionally will actually have not been registered before and they haven't participated before. So I think turnout questions really are crucial. The second thing in terms of support level, the big question is what's going to happen with younger voters. What we saw in Melaka is that many younger voters went to Bersatu PAS, PN at that time. And I think UMNO didn't capture as much younger voters. And so I think they have reasons to be uneasy because now we see a different type of campaign that's emerging in Johor. We have MUDA contesting, which they didn't do in Melaka, who particularly targeting younger voters. And we have a still Bersatu and a weak UMNO engaging younger voters. So I think this is going to create a lot of competitiveness because younger voters are particularly important in a large number of seats.
All right. And speaking about MUDA, what do you make of the fact that DAP and AMANA had already agreed to make way for MUDA to contest in six seats in the Johor elections? I'm just wondering because what do you make about that and PKR, in terms of PKR and their negotiations with MUDA for seats?
I think the parties realize that they have to work together because there's going to be a fragmented electorate. And if they work against each other, it's going to be against their own interests. I think that what we see in the negotiations is that DAP and AMANA and PKR have different strategies and relationships with MUDA. DAP and AMANA were able to reach an agreement earlier. I think we're going to see negotiations continue, but I think the relationship between MUDA and PKR, it has a lot more history and it's not as cordial, partly because of the relationship between Mahathir and Anwar in terms of perception that MUDA is connected to Mahathir, which it's not, but the perception that from historical grounds. And also because they're trying to go after the same base. PKR still wants to sees itself as a multi-ethnic party, and MUDA is a multi-ethnic party in terms of its on the ground. So I think there are structural reasons why that relationship beyond personalities would actually have more challenges in negotiations.
Bridget, just Bridget, to follow up on PKR, can I just get you to help us make sense of PKR's behavior recently, particularly in deciding to use its own logo for the Johor polls, while DAP and Amanah will be under the Harapan banner? How are you making sense of that?
Well, look, I think that, you know, PKR as a party and its leadership, there is a troubled relationship in Pakatan Harapan. And I think that PKR is asking whether or not it can work with DAP long term, work with Amanah. And I think what it's doing in terms of its go-it-alone strategy is basically trying to give itself leverage to be a different, to have different coalition partners in down the line, to go back to a more its independent roots. But of course, in doing that, I think that this undermines Anwar Ibrahim's leadership of Pakatan Harapan. And I think it's very interesting to see that there hasn't been much uproar among the other parties when Anwar has just chosen to go it alone. They think their own political fortunes are going to be stronger going it alone. And I think this is going to be a test. And it's interesting because in Johor, there are other PKR leaders that even have, local popularity, such as Madli. And so Anwar's popularity in Johor, I think, will be tested. And I think this is in some ways going to be a really decisive for whether or not Anwar Ibrahim will lead the opposition coalition. And I think by choosing to go it alone, he's actually jeopardizing his chances to lead the opposition, because I think there are many people who see this as him abandoning the coalition of Pakatan Harapan.
Bridget, there has been a lot of rancor between UMNO leaders and PAS leaders and UMNO leaders and Bersatu leaders sniping at each other the last couple of weeks. But we also see this, within the Pakatan Harapan coalition. We just have news today that PKR Wanita Johor chief has come out saying she's very unhappy that Putri Wangsa state seat that Amanah was given has been handed to Umuda. Do you think that, as it happens in other scenarios, that they might start to sabotage each other, meaning that PKR might think, well, you know, why should we help Muda in that particular constituency, but shouldn't we in fact work to undermine it? I mean, do you think the relationship can get that bitter?
I think it's pretty clear that sabotage will be a factor in Johor across political parties and across coalitions. I mean, you know, Pejuang's entrance, for example, into the contest reflects some of the kind of outstanding revenge and anger at different players. We see new divisions in Bersatu, and I think in terms of Pakatan Harapan, we're going to see some disgruntled candidates. You know, negotiations are tough, and individuals have been affected. And I think that this is what we saw in terms of her expressing her views today. And I think that she has reasons for being angry, because she's worked the seat for some time. And of course, what's important is that there wasn't much consultation. But I think the sabotage factor will be quite significant across the different contests.
Right. Well, Bridget, I mean, lots of posturing, lots of sniping, lots of rancor, but there are no permanent enemies in politics. I'm just wondering whether as we come closer to nomination day, might we see more cooperation, more concessions being made for a united front to go against Barisan Nasional? This is in terms of the opposition. Might we see some cooperation for unlikely allies, or do you think it will be three coalitions going at it?
Well, you see, more generally, UMNO and to a certain degree PN, they are able to manage their differences. And it usually, in the beginning part of the campaign, there will still be some sabotage, but they are able to manage that, usually with patronage, sometimes with financial rewards, some sort of accommodation. And I think what it makes that different, because those differences somehow become less significant comparatively to the opposition, where the opposition plays out its differences in the media. And this is what is featured. And of course, they don't necessarily come to terms and with some of those differences, and there is a lot of sometimes personal bitterness on the ground. And, you know, a lot of these parties are facing personal bitterness. For example, PKR is facing a problem of the purge in its own party and the members that were purged as a result of the divisions. So my sense is that they manage these issues of cooperation and sabotage very differently. My expectation, however, is that I think that there will be some coming together of some of the parties, and I think the agreement that was reached between Amana DAP and MUDA is an indication of that some parties in Pakatan Harapan recognize the need for cooperation.
Bridget, beyond, you know, the question of strategy, are there questions of policy? Could you give us a sense of what Johor is grappling with as an economy, as a society, you know, the border closures with Singapore and its impact on people's livelihoods? Do these, will these feature prominently, do you think, during the campaign? Or is it all going to be about loyalty and who was better and who was worse at being a Menteri Besar or not?
Sharad, you ask an excellent question. And one of the things that's going on is that the voters are looking at things very differently from the ground. They're tired of this pettiness, the politicking, and the posturing. And I think on the ground we see Johor has faced a very serious time during COVID. We see an increase in poverty based on statistics that came out last year. We have 5.6% of the population is in poverty, an increase. We see the income levels have leveled off and there's rising inequalities. We also see a situation where the economy has contracted and is clearly not back at pre-COVID-19 levels. And so we see a situation where bread and butter issues are paramount. It's not a coincidence, for example, that the Black Flag Movement, many of those protests came in Johor, and you have a sense that the economy has been stuck in its own model of relying on getting jobs from Singapore, and the border closure has affected it, not just in terms of the economy, but it's also affected and divided families and the emotional and mental anguish that many Johorians have had to feel during this pandemic has had a particular element with its relationship with Singapore because of the closed borders. So I think these issues are very much on the minds of many of the voters in terms of bread and butter concerns, livelihood, issues of health and security. I think the timing of the election is worrisome for many because it's still likely to be in the peak of Omicron. So I think these are things that are going to be on the ground. We're going to see whether or not any of the parties can begin to address these issues or to rely on kind of patronage and party campaigns. My expectation is that once these rancor negotiations are over, we're going to see more policy discussions. I think on the part of UMNO, we do see a leadership in the state that has raised serious issues and the economy and concerns. I think there are many individuals across parties that have, platforms and discussions of issues. And I think it'll be interesting if those things begin to gain more traction and set Malaysia in a different direction to talk about how to solve the problems from flooding to providing food on the table, as opposed to talking about personalities and whether or not they can work together.
Okay, Bridget, in the minute or so that we have left, I want to ask you, I mean, it's been said that this is UMNO's election to lose. They have an advantage given that there's deep loyalty to UMNO in Johor. Can I ask you what might shake that? What might give them a run for their money?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that UMNO's support has been declining quite precipitously since 2008. It started particularly with BN Partners, but losing support, and then UMNO. But it has been a drop over time. It wasn't just in GE14. And so the question becomes is how do they be able to garner and maintain those loyalties? And I think if we compare the drop in support in Johor with that of Malacca, it's actually more precipitously serious in Johor. So they will have to win back more support in order to be able to win the state, even though they do have a large number of states that seats that they have an advantage in. And I think this is why Borsato is actually such a threat to them, because if they were able to garner a significant share of the vote, even though that party itself is suffering quite considerably, and unfortunately its leader, former Prime Minister Mujahideen, has COVID, and I wish him well, I think the situation is such that that party is facing a lot of political challenge in that state. So I think UMNO will face the issue of how to garner young voters, how to manage its conflict, how to basically redefine itself, and to deal with the issues of bringing in new leaders. There's a lot of dead wood and a lot of people who are a lot of incumbents in Johor. I think that how they do the transition. These are the issues that I think the party will wrestle with, as well as managing the big problems of who's leading the country and how the role that leaders like Najib and Zahid and Hishamuddin and Ismail Sabri will play. Those things are going to make it very challenging. And I think what's going to be determinant is how the young people vote in Johor, because of the fact that they are such a large share of the electorate, and also how whether or not there's going to be adequate turnout across the different seats in order to be able to reflect a kind of more competitive and inclusive election.
Bridget, always a pleasure speaking to you. That was political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh from the Asia Research Institute at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break, but more on this topic. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for staying with Shred and I on Consider This. Let's continue our look at what to expect in the lead up to the Johor State elections, which today the Election Commission announced has been set for March 12th. Joining us on the line now is Sharil Sabaruddin. He's a senior fellow at the Bait al-Amana Research Institute. Sharil, let's focus on UMNO at the start of this conversation. UMNO seemed to be the party with pole position in these elections, but I'm just wondering what your sense is in terms of where their advantage lies and just how much of an advantage they have going into the elections.
Hi, okay. Actually, when we look at UMNO's advantage specifically, there are things that we are kind of like lost in the narrative when we talk about the number of voters. A lot of political pundits come up with, latch on to the idea of this new 750,000 voters. I know that my opinion might be against the popular sentiment, but when we look at it, right, the number of the new voters, especially the automatically registered voters, a lot of them, half of them resides under in 13 seats out of 56, and most of these 13 seats are already Pakatan Harapan strongholds. So if let's say the political narrative focuses a lot on that area of, and a lot of political parties latches on to how to actually appeal to this new base support, then they're losing the other side of the narrative, the other side of the political spectrum, which are people who are already politically active, people who are already registered and has their own political affiliation. And this resides in the center part of Johor and also the traditional seats of Barisan Nasional. Now, bear in mind also that there is a seismic shift in 2018 from Barisan Nasional to whoever is against Barisan Nasional at that time, driven mainly because of, largely being persuaded by the National Compendium of the day. But this time around, these people might go back because of the fact that they are disgruntled, narratives or disgruntled expectations that have not been met during the time when PH was in power. So that number, in some places, go up to 22% of the electorate. So there is, if UMNO could latch on to their ready day supporters, expand it a bit to the people who have actually shifted away during PRE14, and kind of maintain their standing in terms of reaching out to the younger voters who are uniquely identified to them, then they stand a chance. And just to expound on that a bit more, this 150,000 new 18 to 20-year-old voters, 59% of them are actually Malays. And these Malays are imbued under, some of them still vote according to the character of the value of the character of the place that they live in. So perhaps they still have an edge. I do want to ask you this.
I mean, is UMNO's main rival in this election Bersatu? And I ask this partly because Bersatu is led by a former Johor Menteri Besar, right? I mean, in the sense that Muhyiddin Yassin's party, does that bring a particular shine to it? Also, what do you make of the fact that Muhyiddin Yassin has said that he's not going to contest in these elections? Is that a sign that Bersatu is not confident? How do you rate the UMNO-Bersatu competition?
Well, of course, UMNO Bersatu competition lies in the Malay heartlands. The question is always about which party has the biggest and strongest machinery when you talk about voter outreach. But at the same time, also persuading the new voters to go to which political party resonates best with the electorate. Now, Bersatu and UMNO has this deep rivalry, latching on to my earlier point, UMNO still has their own core voters, core base supporters, and Bersatu, during PRU14, they actually rode on popular sentiments against UMNO, and most of their bulk of their vote base are non-Malays. So Bersatu still has a lot of work in terms of convincing. If you take Melaka as our baseline reference to this, there was a shift or there was an appeal among some of these electorates, especially the younger Malays, to Bersatu, particularly not because of personality driven so much, but because of, I think it's a new political brand that they would like to see, championing their cause. But also, if you notice, during this whole entire election, the whole ethno-religious compendium is starting to take a back stage compared to economic platform. So it's just a matter of who speaks right to the right mind and right psyche of the voters that will actually be.
Can I ask you about that, though, Shahril? Just looking at, let's just see the differences between Bersatu and UMNO. I'm just wondering, are there any real differences in terms of policy issues between the parties, or is it just down to the brand and the personalities of the people in the party?
At the moment, when you look at it, it's more, it's toxic politicking from behalf of both parties, just trying to degrade one another. But we're waiting for the policy deliberation from both parties to tell us what is best in terms of the offers to the people. At the moment, it's very difficult to determine how is the political shift like. But in terms of campaigning at the moment, looking at the onset of things, it's just kind of like positioning their parties as the better option between the two. It just in terms of mostly the political personalities in play.
Right. Okay. So, can we look at the six seats that Muda got from Amana and DAP announced today? Tenang, Bukit Kepong, Parit Raja, Machap, Puteri Wangsa, Bukit Permai. Do you think these are very winnable seats? I mean, are we going to look at outcomes that put Muda in a strategically strong position when it comes to government formation after the elections?
I think most of the seats are already seats that are won by Bersatu, and there are some very contentious seats that are held by UMNO. But if we take the barometer of Muda as being the most appealing party to the 18 to 20 year old, I think that some seats might stand a better negotiation if, let's say, they shift between it. For example, Tenang. If they could have changed Tenang to Kota Iskandar, they have a much higher chance winning, because Kota Iskandar has the largest 18 to 20 year old voter registration, 18 to 20 year old voters. And Puti Wangsa is okay, pretty okay. But just as I said, of course, when you talk about one-on-one contestation, then perhaps Muda will then leverage on the ready vote base that Pakatan Harapan has already had. But like I said, when you talk about the chances, then we have to look at a lot more than just the AVR voters. We have to also look at the first-time voters in PRD14 that might have that might have a different opinion this time in this PRN, which can go up to 25% of the overall vote count. So this shift, I mean, this group of people perhaps are the one who contributed to the non-turnout in the other PRNs. Mm-hmm. So they are activated during PRE14, but there's a question whether or not they would actually vote this time around. And this would impede on the electoral outcomes of Muda and Pakatan Harapan as a whole. Yes, that's right.
Okay. Shariel, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Appreciate your insights. Shariel Sabarudin from Bait Al-Amanah there. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching and good night.
Tonight.